All right, thank you for being here tonight. I know we have our summer kickoff Sunday in a couple weeks, and I understand summer really is already started. But I know we have a lot going on if you look at our calendar, but it's not stuff you do every week, okay? We have the Monday night dinners and different groups in the church, and there'll be one time that will be for your group. For my wife and I, it'll be every Monday night. That's fine. And then we have summer saturation. And by the way, I encourage you strongly to sign up for that. That's when we go out and we go soul winning. We invite people to our church, and it's exciting. We're going to have this year for the children, we have a summer skills, which is going to be better than we've had in a lot of years. And I encourage you to sign up for that. Say, I've never done that before. Come out with us. You'll enjoy it. The sun is out. It's brighter longer. People have a better spirit when you go by, and we're very excited about that. We have the Friday fellowship at our house. All the different Sunday school classes will be there. I'm excited about our Thursday night fellowship. We feed you from 6:30 to 7:15, and then we have a service. We kind of get rid of some of the stuff we do at the beginning of the service for those 4 or 5 weeks so that we're not here any later than normal. But I encourage you to be part of that, and let's just be faithful this summer. Okay, I know we have vacation time. You go out, and by the way, vacation, I get it. You miss a Sunday or two, but it's not all Sunday long, all summer long. Can I get an amen right there? Okay, we still have nursery to take care of. We still have buses to run, Sunday school classes, and so let's be faithful to that. And I encourage you, and you're the crowd that does it, for to flourish. Let's be at all the services: Sunday morning, Sunday night, Sunday school, and Thursday night. Brother Kevin, thank you so much for that testimony. That was a great testimony. Brother Ron, thank you for that. And very, very encouraged. Newer in our church and just bought into that. And it's good to be together. And I just enjoy being at church. And so I hope that you'll just join us for all these different things. You say, man, that's a lot on the schedule. Look, you're only going to a couple of those things. During the summer, we're doing something Monday night, Tuesday night. We get Wednesday night off. Thursday night, Friday night, and then Sunday. That's why when our vacation comes at the end of the summer, we're ready to get out of here, okay? So we're looking forward to it. Tonight's message, I got good news and I got bad news for you. The bad news is it's a longer message. I'm not going to lie. It's probably twice as long as a regular message. Okay, you'll be asleep in 5 minutes. You ever notice, oh, amen. It's like, all right, grab your pillow. I'll listen for the word amen. The good news is it's a two-parter, okay? So cut it in half. You know, throughout history and throughout the Bible, and I won't go into all of them, there are people who have challenged God. I think of Goliath. Goliath got up and he challenged the armies of God, and really what he was doing is he was challenging God. That was one of the things that David said. How dare you challenge and blaspheme God? And David took care of it. It didn't end up very well for him. King Sennacherib, when Hezekiah was the king, Sennacherib of Assyria came in, and they had conquered several of the lands around there, and so he was lifted up in his military might, and he came against Israel, and he started Judah, and he started spouting off, and he said, the gods of the other land haven't been able to do anything, your God's not going to be able to do anything, and he told the people, he said, don't listen to Hezekiah, who's telling you to rest on God, don't listen to him. We've defeated the other gods. We're going to take you down too. And I like that Hezekiah took the note and he just took it and he laid it out like, God, read this. You see what he's saying? And what happened to him? God wiped out their army without Israel lifting a hand. And Sennacherib, when that happened, he went back home. And because he went home in defeat, his sons assassinated him. It doesn't go well when people stand against God. There was a famous atheist, Voltaire. He lived up until 1778. In 1776, here's what he said. 100 years from my day, there will not be a Bible on the earth except one that is looked upon by antiquity and curiosity seeker. He also said this, the Bible, that is what fools have written, what imbeciles commend, what rogues teach, and young children are made to learn by heart. At least the last part's right. We try to teach them to the children. We are living, he said, we are living in the twilight of Christianity. He also said this: Christianity is the most ridiculous, the most absurd, and bloody religion that has ever infected the world. My one regret in dying, listen to this guy. My one regret in dying is that I cannot aid you in this noble enterprise of ridding the world of this infamous superstition. Sounds to me like he had a problem with God. By the way, 50 years later, in the very house in which he lived, they were printing Bibles and selling Bibles. I think he got it wrong. There have always been those who challenge God. But you need to understand that when people challenge God, by almost by proxy, they're going to challenge God's people. They're going to see us as representatives of God. And they're not always going to be excited about Christianity. We have lived in a country that was founded by those who I believe 70% or so, I think that's a number I heard, of our founding fathers had degrees in theology. Okay? By the way, don't buy it when they tell you in school, you know, well, not our school. They tell you in school like they didn't believe in Christianity. They did. Even Thomas Jefferson, who was not a Christian, understood the importance of Bible morality in a country. The point I'm making is we have changed, and I'm going to mention that in a minute. Daniel is a book that's very applicable to today. Daniel lived in a pagan society. He was taken captive and brought into Babylon. And so he was going to face things that would challenge his faith. In the chapter in which we read, you all know it. I mean, the first Sunday school lesson I ever taught to five-year-olds was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these guys here. And so Daniel, in this story, King Nebuchadnezzar decided that he did not like the interpretation of the dream that Daniel gave to him in Daniel chapter 2. In Daniel chapter 2, he had a dream. There was an image that he saw, and it depicted the coming ruling world powers from then until the end times. And Nebuchadnezzar did not like that. He wanted to have a kingdom that extended forever. And so he built himself a statue, and he made it out of one metal, signifying that his kingdom was going to go on, which that didn't work out very, very well for him. But his came with a requirement of the citizens. The requirement was that we're going to play the music, and when any citizen hears the music playing, that they had to bow down and worship the image. Now that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a problem for God's people. And three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were Jews. But they were serving because they had proven themselves, and they were serving in a little bit of a higher capacity, and they didn't bow down. And so inevitably what happens, King Nebuchadnezzar is told of that, and he does not handle it well. He brings Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego before him and gives them one last chance. But he makes a stipulation. He says, guys, I'm going to cue up the band. And as soon as they play, you had better bow down. And if you don't bow down, you're going to be thrown into the fiery furnace. And the men, and we'll look at it later, but they basically tell him, we ain't doing it. I mean, we may perish. God may protect us. We ain't doing it. Nebuchadnezzar, if you know him from history, he did not handle that very well. He fired up the fire so hot in his anger that the men who threw them in burned up just because they were close when they were throwing them in. Now, you know the story. They survived and all of that. But what I want us to notice something about Nebuchadnezzar tonight. I want to help him. He's dead, but I want to help him. He had his problems. History tells us the kind of leader he was. He had problems with people. He did not treat people well. When he took over nations, he did not. He was very, 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 very cruel. He had trouble with his power. He took it to an ultra extreme as a world leader. He didn't have much patience. Remember, he had a dream and it troubled him. He said, you guys tell me the dream and tell me interpretation. If not, I'm going to kill you. And they're like, we can't do it. He goes, you're dead. Okay? He was not a very patient individual. And of course, he had trouble with pride, and God dealt with him later about that. But with all of his problems, his biggest problem was his problem with God. We're going to see that. That's true with all who don't understand God, who don't want to know God and want to follow our society's belief. They're going to have a problem with God, and they don't have a use for God. I think of our school systems. You know what the problem, by the way, the reason our country is in the shape it's in is because of our school systems. When they commandeered our school systems in the 60s, we've raised a bunch of little people that they can't even think. Okay, they throw their little thing, my body, my, all this different stuff, and when you challenge them with truth, it's like they don't want to talk about it. Why? They don't have an answer. It's all how I feel. But that all started in our school systems. And when did that happen? When they kicked God out, the 60s. When they kicked the Bible out. When they kicked prayer out. That's what happened. Now you have this society that has no moral governor, and now we're to the point where our school systems just push all that. Why? They're anti-God. That's why we have a Christian school. In our workplaces, they have a problem with God. You're told to dress a certain way regardless of what your beliefs are. We had someone that worked for Disney several years ago, and they wanted to dress modestly, and Disney did not allow it. They sent me and said that I could write a letter. You know, I think it said, have your priest send us a letter. Well, I'm not a priest, okay? But I just, the very simple letter, and they had to jump through a bunch of hoops, and they allowed them an exemption for that. But most workplaces aren't. By the way, in a lot of them, they'll ding you for stuff you post on your own time on your own personal social media accounts. Why? They're anti-God. Our tech companies, they censor anything that's conservative. But by the way, radical Islamics can keep their social media accounts. But if you say something, how many of you know what the Babylon Bee is? Okay, sometimes it's irreverent, but it's hilarious. They got kicked off for saying that the guy, I don't know his name, and he is a guy, by the way, the military guy that Biden put in that says he's a girl, he's a guy. All they did was point out that a guy won Woman of the Year, and they booted him off. Okay, all they were stating was a fact. But why? It's conservative. And most conservative views typically generated from the Bible. The Bible's a very conservative living book. But if you're radical, it's okay. You can post anything. Our entertainment. Almost anything Christian in entertainment is always presented in a negative light. They'll show every form of godlessness. But boy, you try to throw something wholesome or Christian in there, it's not going to fly. And here's the saddest thing. Our businesses. Since when is a business in the business of promoting a moral or political view? Right? I mentioned this morning Taco Bell. I have a really good reason not to go back there now. And my stomach will live longer because of it. They're not the only ones, by the way. Fisher Price, who makes young children's toys, now has a transgender doll. And you look at their commercials, it's not about, hey, you know, trying to sell you on how good their food is. It's about to sell you on some moral thing. It has nothing to do with their product. We've gone nuts. But the biggest thing is we kicked God out. Once he got out of school, he got out of everything. And people in positions of power and influence fight it. How about the governor of New York during the COVID thing when their numbers actually went down and he got up, he made a point to get up for some ignorant reason and say, let me just say, God had nothing to do with that. How'd that work out for him? He didn't even finish his term. Okay. You know what? Look, if you want to call somebody out, don't call God out. That's free advice. They closed churches during that time, saying they were not essential, but bars and all these other ignorant places got to stay open. That was on purpose. But anyhow, I'm feeling better, so let's move on. But Nebuchadnezzar had that same problem, and we're going to see it in verse 15. and then I'm going to help him. Daniel chapter 3 and verse 15, you ready? He pulls the guys in. He's telling them he's going to give them another chance, and here's what he says. Now, if ye be ready, that at the time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. Okay. That's option A. But if not, ye shall be cast in the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. That's option B. All right? But here's his statement. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? He didn't just challenge their beliefs. He didn't just challenge their choice. He challenged their God. He took it from challenging them to challenging God, and that's a losing play every single time. Who is that God? Well, Nebuchadnezzar, I'm glad you asked. I'm going to answer that question for him. And there's two answers to the question. We'll look at one tonight, and we'll look at one next week. Nebuchadnezzar, let me explain who that God is. Are you ready? He is, number one, the God of great people. He's the God of great people. The fact of the matter is, although it's not always in a positive light, the greatness of God should be reflected in the lives of his people. People don't see God. But I'll tell you what, they see us each and every day. And we don't need to be perfect, but our life ought to be in such a way that we are a good reflection of God. It's kind of sad in a sense that in some instances, in a lot of instances, God's reputation is staked to his people. And I hope that we would be the kind of people that although we're not perfect, they can see that we're sincere, that they can see we're trying to be genuine, and that they look at us and they think better or well about God. He ought to be the God of great people. If that's going to be the case, of course, we need to be certain kind of people. There's kind of a mold that comes with that. And we see it in the book of Daniel in the lives of his people. The people specifically mentioned in the book of Daniel are Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, or Shadrach, Meshach, or Abednego, whatever you want to call them. These four men, throughout the first half of Daniel, before he gets into the prophecy, showed what a Christian should be. They showed what someone who followed God should be in a pagan society. It was not a good society. It was not a society of mostly God believers. It was a pagan society with pagan deities and really pagan rulers. But yet these men, they nailed it. These men, in several instances, changed the minds of their rulers by their actions and what they did. So what did they do? And what should we be if we're going to be these great people of God? Well, let me tell you what these people were like and what we should be like. First of all, they were people of conviction. Look at Daniel chapter 1. We're going to look through the book of Daniel over the next 2 weeks. Daniel chapter number 1. And verse number 8, we know this well, but I think we need to see it again. Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, it says, but Daniel purposed in his heart, that's conviction, that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat. That's what the conviction was about. See, a conviction always has a corresponding action or a corresponding commitment to specific inactions. He said he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portions of the king's meat, nor with the wine he drank. Therefore, he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Do you get that there? He was willing to put his life on the line, along with his buddies, for dietary laws. Why? Because he had conviction. He decided that ahead of time. See, in chapter 1, they were fairly new into Babylon. But what Nebuchadnezzar would do is, you know, he took some of the brightest of the land, and he brought them, and he would try to re-educate and change them to become good Babylonian citizens. Now, it didn't take with these guys. They didn't become good Babylonian citizens because he wanted them to become good Babylonian citizens and encompass their false gods, but these guys kept their gods. Kept their God. Why? Because they purposed ahead of time. They had a conviction. So what they did is they went to the guy and they brokered a deal. Like, look, I know what you're trying to do. You want us to be healthy and all that. Let us try this and see how it works out. Because we want to be healthy, but we just can't do this. And in this case, they were able to do it without having to put their lives on the line. But the fact of the matter is, the choice on whether or not they would eat the certain things of the diet or drink the wine was made long before they ever faced that choice. The point isn't that they made the right choice. The point is when they made the right choice. The choice wasn't made in the moment. The choice was made a long time before that. And let me say this, if you don't have conviction about anything in the scriptures, about any way you live, and you wait till a situation arises, and you sit there when you see the situation, and then you mull over it, what are the positives, what are the negatives, or is it something I want to do, you lost it already, it's over. Because the flesh is strong. Very, very strong. But when you have a conviction, you have decided ahead of time, and it just comes out. Hey, you want it? No. Hey, you want to go soul winning? Yes. Okay. You have a conviction. You've decided ahead of time. Don't wait. Well, I'll just kind of play it by ear. And then we set conviction. We set some standards to keep us from being put into positions where we have to make these decisions. We fight it on the front end. Daniel did it early because he knew he was going to be in a pagan country. He knew he was going to face temptations, and he knew he was going to have to stand. So long before he faced any of the scenarios, he had already purposed in his heart what the answer would be. That is conviction. Conviction is deciding ahead of time what you believe and how you will act when your belief is challenged. It's not saying, okay, I know what my belief is, but what are the possible consequences if I follow through on my belief? And what are the possible consequences if I give in to my belief? That's not how life works. And by the way, we are so wishy-washy. We're nothing more than Christian politicians. You ask a politician a question, a point-blank question that you want a point-blank answer, and they'll talk for 20 minutes and not say anything. That's how we are. It doesn't work that way. I like Moses' question. Who is on the Lord's side? There's no middle ground. You're either over there, not on God's side, or you're on this side. And unfortunately, for those that weren't on God's side, there was an earthquake and it didn't turn out well for them. But whose side are you on? That's conviction. Convictions are beliefs from the Bible that result in commitment to predetermined courses of action. Some of you don't have any convictions. I'm just telling you. And by the way, you're challenged on them and you take the fleshly way. You take the popular way. You take the way, the path of least resistance. That may keep you out of problems on the short term, but it's going to cause a lot more problems in the long term. It's always right to do the right thing. You say, well, what's the reward for doing right? Here's the reward. You did right. Well, my boss didn't like it, you did right. Okay, they're not negotiable. You know, well, can we just get together and compromise? No. No. If it's something that, you know, like, I want this for dinner, you want that for dinner. Can we get a compromise? That's fine, as long as you do what I want. Thanks for not catching that. You know, that's not important. Unless they're trying to get you to eat fish or McDonald's. But when it comes to God, we can't negotiate this. They didn't get in our story, they didn't get with Nebuchadnezzar and said, no, Nebuchadnezzar, I know what you're trying to do here. But why don't we come to an understanding? You know, we'll kneel with one knee and we'll look to God with the other. No, we don't do that. It was not negotiable. It was not just an option. It was not a preference. That was a rock solid belief. Now, what happens when we don't want to be, when we don't want to have convictions? Well, here's what it is. The opposite of convictions is compromise. You compromise. Compromise. You do something that you know is not right. You go against it. You know what the right thing to do is, and yet you choose to do that which is not right. Now, you may try to excuse it. Well, you know, it's just, I had a teenager, back when I had the youth group, God bless them, teenagers are great. She came, well, you know the church believes this, but that's just not my biblical belief. I'm like, well, show me from the Bible. And they gave me a look, and I'm like, you haven't opened your Bible in a year. Don't sit here and try to tell me what you believe if you're not even in your Bible. You just want to do your own thing. It's going against what you know is right. It's excusing actions that you know are wrong. That's compromise. It's appeasing people to try to keep the peace. You know, I'll be a Christian at work, but I'm going to be on the real down and down. You know, I just like, you know, undercover Christian. Spy Christian. That doesn't work. Everywhere I've ever worked, I just, whenever I'd get a job, from the time I got right with God, the first thing I do is I just let them know I'm a Christian. Like, why? Is it important? Were you trying to be? No, I just wanted to keep myself in check. Because I knew if I told them I was a Christian, they were going to expect me to live like one, or else you hear it, trust me. It's backing down when you know you should stand up. By the way, that's why I'm not banging on Christians, but I am. Because it's not every Christian. But that's why our society is in a mess. You go to the average church, they don't stand for anything. They're like, they're so, and now churches are rushing to embrace the garbage going on in our society. Well, I heard a clip. He was the Southern Baptist president a couple years ago. He said it at every Christian's job to advocate for transgendered. He's wrong. He needs to get a Bible. Since when does God tell us to abdicate for sin? So I guess I need to be an advocate for adultery. I guess I need to be an advocate for murderers. No. We don't need to, now we don't need to hate them. I hope they get saved. But it's not my job to stand up for their sin. It's not going well. If you don't choose to live your convictions ahead of time, the point, you will give in to compromise in the moment. It will always happen. Our society has soured because of the compromise of Christians. We've compromised. We don't look to the Bible for our choices. We look at society and we see options. We don't want to be out of touch because of our Christian attitudes, so we conform to the world, which means we're going to live those actions. Before we move on to the second point, let me just ask this. Do you have any biblically based beliefs that you are willing to never back down on? Then you don't have any convictions. Things that if it comes up, it's like the answer is no. Someone gives you an opportunity, no. Well, and by the way, people don't know. I remember years ago, I don't know why we first moved to Florida and we were moving into our house and it was hot and a neighbor came out. He wanted to meet the new neighbors, you know. And he offered me a beer. I'll be honest with you, you know the humidity's in Florida. I was really tempted. I'm like, man, that sounds really cold. And it's now I didn't jump up on a table and say, bro, Christian, don't do that. Okay. I was like, oh, no thanks. I don't drink. No big, you know. Look, we don't have to be idiots. But boy, we need to stand. Secondly, and I'll explain it, we need to be people of comparison. And I'll explain it because comparison is really negative, but not in this sense. Skip down in Daniel chapter 1 to verse 18. Now, we know what happens. Daniel said, look, he by the way, this will help too. He Daniel had a fondness for the unsaved leader who was over him. He didn't want to see him get in trouble. He knew that what he was being asked to do came from him, but it came from a higher up. And so Daniel's like, hey, can we just, let us have our own diet. Let us try this. And then after, I think it was 10 days or so, he said, check us out and just see how we're doing. And he agreed to that, and he checked it out, and he's like, you know what, you're good to go. And then the wise men, what the king would do with these people that were trained, he would have audiences with them to see how they were doing. Well, it's Daniel and his buddies, they go before the king, and I want you to see what he said. Verse 18, now at the end of the days, that the little period of testing, the king had said that he should bring them in. Then the priests of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Let me see these guys. And the king communed with them. And he talked with them, like, you know, asked specific questions, checking these guys out. Are they going to be leaders? You know, that type of thing. And among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. That's their pre-Babylonian names of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore stood they before the king. The king goes, these guys are, you know, like interviewing for a job. One guy comes in, it's like, all right, this guy is head and shoulders above everybody else. That's what he's saying. These guys, there's nobody like these guys. And in all manners of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, all the questions. Now look at this. He found them, what's an extra word? 10 times better than all the magicians, astrologers that were in his realm. He looked at all of his regular Babylonian citizens and the ones he was training for these leadership and wisdom positions. And that would also include the Jewish intelligent folks that they had also brought up and all that. And he said, these guys, they are 10 times better. Now think about that. That was not a proud statement. It was not based on pride. It was based on their relationship with God. There was something noticeable about these boys. Now, it started with their convictions, but they were living such a life that the king looked at them when he talked to them and said, these guys are great. These guys are 10 times better than anybody else. In comparison, everything for them was better. We had a guy several years ago, many, many years ago in our church. He actually worked in one of the He actually worked in government for a while back for one of the presidents. But I was talking to him, and he was talking about when he used to be the head of, he was head of a section of Walmart. And he told us, he goes, you know, whenever we have a kid, whenever we would get applications, if the child had any type of Christian education, he goes, we would always hire him. He goes, you know why? He goes, we knew they wouldn't steal. We knew they wouldn't, and he just listed all these things. He goes, you can't get employees that don't do that. Now, by the way, that's a good testimony. And I'll just interject this. If you have a job somewhere, you ought to strive to be that kind of person. Not perfect, but you ought to be. Look, if you're going to tell people you're a Christian, you represent Christ. But by comparison, this comparison that they were 10 times better was not pride, was not kind of some kind of false form of spiritual conformity. By the way, you can look the part and not be the part. Let me say that right now. You can look good and do all the spiritual things, but you know what you're doing when you're away from here. That's not the part we're talking. Not some spiritual conformity. And by the way, if all they had was spiritual conformity, when they faced the fire in the chapter we just read, they wouldn't have made it. They would have thrown that out in a heartbeat. And it wasn't something to make themselves, you know, we're so much better. No. Remember, they didn't say it. Nebuchadnezzar said it. Now let me just say this, as people look at our lives as Christians, are our lives better off because we follow God? Are we a better brand, and please, I understand, I'm not talking about pride. Are we a better brand of individual because we know God? See, because if you know God and you know the Bible, you'll have better character. You'll have better attitudes. You'll have everything will be better, not because you're better, but because you're following God. Because they followed God and did the right things, their life was just better. Now, first and foremost, let me interject this before we move on. The reason for serving God is that isn't that God gives us all this stuff, although he does. The reason we serve God is because it's just the right thing to do. Right? Sometimes, I'll serve God and, you know, I'll do this and this and all these good things will happen. And then you go through some things in your life. And it's like, where's God? He's still there. But we're not serving him just because everything's honky-dory. But if we do serve him, everything is better than it should have been. But we should just do it because it's the right thing to do. I really, and I struggle with this, and I get it. Sometimes we're growing in our faith. I struggle with Christians who are real, legitimate Christians, and they just don't want to obey him. That to me doesn't make any sense, right? I struggle with Christians that they don't even want to come to church faithfully or regularly. I mean, they're saved, and yet church is just an option for them on Sunday. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here. I just don't understand that. I just think if we're saved and we're Christians, we would kind of just want to, you know, I don't know, do Christian things. I don't understand how come a real Christian wouldn't tithe. Say, why'd you say that? Because I'm a pastor. I get the financials every week, and that's like my Wednesday devotions. You know, let me go through line item by line item. And by the way, thankfully, we have a church that gives. But I don't understand how people would fight God. They don't want to serve God. Just let me come and sit in the pew and you know, just hear the thing, and then I'll go home. Listen, why wouldn't we want to do something for him? I don't understand why a real Christian wouldn't want to spend time with God. Why wouldn't we want to learn about him more? I don't understand why a real Christian doesn't want to share the gospel. You know, well, you know, I'm a Calvinist. By the way, did you hear the one about the two Calvinists that went soul winning? Neither did I, okay? If you don't understand what that means, read it on the internet. You'll figure it out later. But that doesn't change the fact that those who serve God face far less self-inflicted problems than others. Going through life, we're going to face trials. Going through life doesn't make us bulletproof just because we love God. But you know what? I've been doing this a long time, and people have so many problems that are self-inflicted. Someone didn't shoot them. They pulled the gun out and shot themselves by their disobedience. And our life can be better. If you're a Christian who loves God's following him, then everything in your life should be better than unbelievers. And that's not, and I'm not trying to be condemning of those who aren't saved. I hope you understand that. But you ought to have a better marriage than those who aren't saved. You should. You ought to have better families than those who are not saved. You know God. You can come to a place where you're encouraged in the Christian principles to live. And when you live those principles, things just go better. Your lifestyle ought to be better. You shouldn't have all the fruit of all these bad decisions and bad choices and bad actions. You don't have to deal with any of that. Your finances should be better. When you understand, and look, stewardship isn't just about you tithing. That's not. Stewardship is about you taking care of everything God gave you. And that includes your finances. And I'll just be honest, your joy should be better. You gotta just have more joy. Why? You can look at things and say, you know what? That annoys me. That irritates me. I wish our world wasn't like that, but you know what? God is still in control. Things are still better with Jesus, and it's okay. And let me just say this, please. It is summer. It is starting. Now, the weather hasn't caught up to that yet, but it is. Let's not use that as an excuse to lower our convictions. Let's not be running around, ladies, immodestly. It just, I know, as soon in California the temperature gets up past 75, the clothes go off. And I'll never understand why a lady would want to show herself to anybody other than her husband. I don't understand that. Let's not get sloppy in our church attendance. Let's not get sloppy. And you know, it's funny, even in Bible reading, we get sloppy with it. Let's stay focused. Well, it's summertime, you know, we'll kind of take summer off for God. You may not come back. Let's keep our families going. It's not that we're better than others, but we serve a better God. Because of our relationship with God, we experience a way better way to live. I opted out of my lifestyle when I was 17. I had all kinds of friends. And unsaved, some of them got saved. But if I look at their lives now, some of them I know about, it's like train wrecks. I thank God when I was on that track, Brother Robert, you probably too could understand that. I thank God that my life got derailed from that nonsense. I've not been perfect, but I do know this, man. it's a lot better going with God than it is going with my own thing. And your life can be better as well. The problem is we have Satan, who is very, very, he's a great salesman. He is. He could sell ice water to an Eskimo. He is. And he sells this lie that serving God restricts. Serving God doesn't restrict, it liberates. I've been doing this for a long, long time. In church, people that have been in church, and those that have decided not to make God 100%, and I understand my heart, and they've left church, they went and did their own thing, the lifestyles and the things they face aren't good. Not that if you step out of church, God's going to hit you with a freight train. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying when you back away from God, when you were following him, understand this, things will never get better. They will only get worse. We'll stop there tonight. But I do hope you get the point that Nebuchadnezzar had no understanding of God. And I'll give you a little snippet into the end of the book. Most people believe that Nebuchadnezzar came to find God. But you know why? If he did, it sounds like he did. In fact, God used him to write chapter 4. If he did find God, it was because of these guys right here. It's because there was great, godly, Christian people. You know what this world needs? The Bible says we're supposed to be salt, light, and all those things. It's what we need to be. And so let's do our best to say, you know what? If I'm a Christian and I'm going to serve God, I want God to be seen in my life. Let's stand together if we may this evening. Every head bowed and every eye closed just for a minute. This world needs something. And by the way, I know things are bad and we mentioned that, but to be honest with you, the world has always needed God. Always. And God's ordained, chosen way to get the truth of the gospel to this world is through Christians. Through Christians. God has chosen to use Christians to propagate the gospel. My point is this: what kind of reflection are we of God? You know what I want? And by the way, we have a lot of great people, and I'm very, very excited. I want when people in our area, I'm being specific to our church, but it's Christian in general. When people see our church members, I hope they say, what's going on over there? I want to find out. Oh, some people may not like it. By the way, sometimes that's a sign you're doing the right thing. But I hope they say, wow, those people there, what's going on in your life? How is that happening? And you can tell them it's the Lord. We have a great God. Why don't we represent him in this world? As we mentioned tonight, it will happen if we have convictions and we follow him wholeheartedly, and the world sees a life that's better than what society has to give. Piano's playing. If God spoke to you at all tonight, why don't you come? Why don't you come?